Hello, my name is Mark Curry. I was born in 1962 in Bedford, and I grew up right across from the present-day Bedford Legion. All those houses have long since been torn down, so the house I grew up in was roughly around where the Bedford Buy and Sell is, right next to the Rubber Duck Garwash. I grew up in very close proximity to the Bedford Rifle Range, so it wasn't uncommon for me as a kid to wake up on a Saturday morning to the sound of gunfire. As I got older, the history of the place sort of fascinated me. I also grew up with war stories of the Bedford Range because during the war, my dad was too young to enlist to go overseas. So, as a teenager, he hung out at the Bedford Range, and the soldiers at the range were very good to him. He would do things like watch movies in what they called the dry canteen with the soldiers. It was quite common for the soldiers to give stuff to his family. They knew that some of the local families weren't all that well off, so it wasn't uncommon for my dad to get pound of butter, pound of sugar, or maybe even a hip of beef dropped off at the end of their driveway by an army truck going by. So the range, rifle range, had definitely an influence on my father and his family, and it influenced me growing up as well, because when I became a teenager, I did such things as mark targets at the what they call the provincial shoot. So the Nova Scotia Rifle Association would have what they would call their annual provincial shoot, where competitors from throughout the province would compete for their annual medals and try and take top score. So during that time, myself and some other local teenagers would be hired to work in the butts to mark the targets. That exposure to the rifle range, and then in little later years, I joined the Princess Louise Fusiliers and actually had an opportunity to shoot at the range myself. I had fired the old Sterling submachine gun, and this would have been around 1979 or 1980. As the years went by, my interest in the history of the place had increased, and I finally decided to start an in-depth research project on the range itself. And it was what I had found out is extremely fascinating. The range was built in 1865. It's a pre-Confederation range. It was built for what they call the local forces of the time. So you had the volunteer militia and what they call the sedentary militia. And then a year later, in 1866, the British garrison made use of the range as well. So there was a lot of activity at that range right from 1865 and onwards. And some of the events that happened up there are really fascinating as well. Yeah, so it was used by local forces and the British garrison that were stationed here in Halifax. And depending on what time period and what year, there was different regiments that had made use of the range. What's fascinating about the range is that the model of the range, or the remodeling of the range, was based on the technology of the day. Meaning that the first rifle that was used out there was the British Pattern 1853 muzzle-loading Enfield. It was a game changer in the British Army because up until that point, most of the regiments were using smoothbore muskets. And that meant that the smoothbore musket ball wasn't very accurate when they fired it. But when they come out and issued the Pattern 1853 muzzle-loading Enfield, it meant that they now could accurately shoot targets as far out as 800 or 900 yards. Now that posed a problem because here in Metro Halifax, there was a number of small rifle ranges that could accommodate the smoothbore musket. However, with this new weapon, they had to come up with a rifle range with that was flat enough and long enough to accommodate the new shooting distances, and with enough safety distance behind it that it wouldn't be pose a hazard to the public. So the site of the Bedford Rifle Range was perfect for this. So with that being said, from 1865 onwards, there was a lot of things that had happened. The range had been remodeled a few times. So the actual range that you see today was actually built during the First World War. There was one just prior to that, which was the 1,000-yard range, which was built in 1900, and the original range, which was a 900-yard range, built in 1865. However, over the years, there was a number of events. There was World War I, where some training had happened out there. There was World War II. During World War II, it was quite interesting. My father remembers vividly all kinds of interesting little events. The soldiers would build, I guess, models or decoys or mock-ups of tanks and jeeps in what we would call the Bedford River floodplain. So where the present-day Bedford Legion is, down and behind there, that was all rifle range property, which is why today it's called Range Park. Back then, Highway 102 did not exist. So that was a continuous piece of property. So along that river floodplain, this is where they built the tanks and jeeps and stuff like that out of 2x4s and burlap bags. Now, the fascinating thing is that Spitfires and Hawker Hurricanes out of Shearwater would fly down over the hills from Saffol and drop flour bags on these potential targets for bombing practice right along that river floodplain. And my father remembers these aircraft, fighter aircraft, flying so low that they could see the helmets of the pilots when they were, and in some cases the pilots would see the kids standing there and the pilots would wave to the kids. Also, it wasn't uncommon to see things like what they call universal carriers, which were little scout cars up at the Bedford Range. You would see, believe it or not, Sherman tanks would be parked at the Chicken Burger on occasion on their way up or to the Chicken Burger and going over the Dartmouth Road back into Dartmouth with their tanks. That was not an uncommon sight. Lots of soldiers around Bedford at the time. My dad had a paper route up there. The Bedford Range was sort of an assembly point, an embarkation camp to some degree for some of the regiments that were getting ready to ship out overseas. So you would have a small tent city up there that would house a lot of these soldiers and do some final training before being shipped out. They had a number of training programs up there to prepare the troops for overseas or prepare local troops for some home duties here. There was a fortress weapon training program that was conducted up at the Bedford Range, and I believe that had to do with the manning of some of the equipment that was stationed around Halifax for the defense of Halifax. So there was a lot of activity up there. Some of the stuff they would train with would be the machine guns that would have been used during World War II. So you would have the Bren gun, the Lewis gun, various other small arms that would actually do mortar training up there. My father remembers watching at a distance, of course, them doing hand grenade training. So there was a lot of military activity. It's hard to believe when you drive by that site today that there was really that much going on there. The range had its own little hospital, had its own little jail, a couple of lockup cells for misbehaved soldiers. Yeah, there was, a lot of activity there. So there's a number of regiments that are closely tied to the history of the range. One being the Halifax Rifles, Halifax Garrison Artillery, Princess Louise Fusiliers, and there's another number of smaller regiments that were trained up there consistently throughout the years. And in terms of civilian organizations, there was the Nova Scotia Rifle Association, whose membership at one time made up a lot of military personnel, but today you'll find there's a lot of civilians in the organization and some military personnel. So they would probably have one of the closest connections to the rifle range. I had said earlier that the annual shoot had taken place there. So with the NSRA, or the Nova Scotia Rifle Association, being closely tied to the rifle range, they had their own what they call a rifle hut up there. In fact, it was the largest building on the site. There was other smaller rifle huts which would have belonged to Princess Louise Fusiliers, Halifax Rifles, Halifax Garrison Artillery. And the last of those huts was torn down, I believe. It might have been the late 80s or early 90s. And then the modern training building you see up there today replaced all of those smaller buildings. There's very few old buildings left There's one Target hut up there. It's from Second World War, and I believe the caretaker's huts may very well date from the Second World War. So what happened was, over the years, the NSRA decided to build their own facility. So now they have built a modern 800-meter range up in way up in Beaver Bank, a place called Bull Meadow. So they now have their own facility up there, so the NSRA no longer makes use of the Bedford Range to do their competitions. And the activities at the Bedford Range today are primarily military, and it's my understanding that it's the Canadian Navy that runs the facility now, and they do things there such as train their naval boarding parties, and they do the annual shooting qualifications are done at the range, and I'm sure some other military-style small arms training and lecturing happens in their training facility, the new building that's there. One aspect of the range is kind of interesting. Because it's built on a river floodplain, historically that range has always flooded. And in recent years, they've built a new bridge to sort of, and I've noticed they've brought the bridge up a little bit. And I believe it's a lot less susceptible now to flooding. But there's some wonderful photos dated from 1942, what they call the Flood of 42. And this is one that my father remembers, where tents were floating down the river. There was so much flooding in the range that it picked up everything in the tent city and carried a lot of it off, and it floated down the river. There was also some tragedies along that river. My father remembers seeing at least one soldier drown in the river. There was a local swimming hole, which they called the Salmon Hole. And that Salmon Hole was popular among soldiers and with the local population. My dad would go up swimming, and it wasn't uncommon for the soldiers to be swimming there too. And it was during this time that my father had seen a soldier drown in the river. So there has been some tragedy up there. Right up until the 1950s, there was families living on the range. There was these quarters up there called H-huts, and these H-huts would accommodate families, and there was also some other buildings that were suitable for families to live in. And there was this gentleman that I had tracked down that he grew up on the range. He remembers as a child trying to get to sleep and looking out his bedroom window and seeing at night live fires happening at night of Bren guns. Now, Bren guns are machine guns, and they would, at nighttime, they would fire tracers. Now, tracers are these things. There are bullets that every fifth bullet in the magazine lights up when you fire it. So, and when you see in the war movies, you see these little lights that look like fireflies buzzing off in the distance. Those are called tracers. And when this gentleman was a child, he would look out the window, and he would watch the barrels heat up in the guns, which you could see at night. And these tracers flying down range. And this is all from his bedroom window. So, you had families living on the range right up until the 1950s. And at that point, they relocated the families into Windsor Park. He was one of the families that was relocated. Especially during the early 1900s into the 1920s and 1930s, most schools, most high schools, believe it or not, in Halifax, had a rifle range in the basement. Queen Elizabeth High School, St. Pat's, I believe, had a rifle range. There were some other schools in Halifax rifle ranges as well. And it was encouraged that boys join the cadets. And once they joined the cadets, then they could join the school rifle team and compete. So that's another part of the story. So it wasn't just professional marksmen and military marksmen. It was also cadets that were sent out there to compete for what they would... the Dominion... Shooting Association of Canada offered these medals up for annual competitions or other competitions, and they would distribute these across Canada. And it was for the encouragement of rifle shooting among young people. And this was a time when, you know, there wasn't the hysteria about guns today. There's so much hysteria about guns. But back then, almost everybody shot. You know, went bird hunting. Your father had a gun. And there was very, very, very few problems with any of this. There's no very, very few gun-related crimes. But anyway, so the cadet system, through the cadet system, these cadets would compete at the rifle range. And there was one gentleman that I had found. His name was Wilfred Creighton. And he was the Minister of Lands and Forests for some time. fascinating guy, but he shot at the Biffert Range in 1922, and he had a photo of himself shooting at the range. And I made an arrangement for him to go out and meet the staff of the range. The Department of Defense, they were gracious in hosting him for a couple of hours to show him around what the range looked like today compared to what it was in 1922 and what the modern weapons look like. So that was a pretty interesting thing. Yeah, so the cadet system, a lot of schools competed against each other and cadets out there as well. And I guess the hope was that these youth would eventually develop an interest in the military and eventually go on to join either the militia service or the reg force. Yeah, so further to my connection with the range, I would mark targets during the annual provincial shoot. And what that meant was that the Nova Scotia Rifle Association would hire local youth or teenagers to work in what they call the target gallery. Now, this is very, very safe. These ranges are built to very high standards for safety and for obvious reasons. So the target gallery is basically kind of like this bunker underneath the ground. Now, if you were to drive by the range or walk by the range on the new trail that's there and you see those numbers up on the hill, well, the target gallery is just a little bit below the numbers. And the numbers correspond with the shooting position on the mound. So a shooter, a sharpshooter, a marksman, or whatever, would be laying at the mound at, say, position number 2. There would be his stake on the mound at position number 2, and he knows he has to shoot at the target under the number 2 up on the hill. It's just to help keep things organized. So the markers, us teenagers, would be hiding down in this bunker, and let's say, for example, I'm the marker for target number 2. And the target is on these things called target frames, and there were kind of like these counterbalanced apparatus. So basically you'd have a 6-foot by 6-foot target in this apparatus and counterweights on the other side. So you could actually just take your hand and very gently pull up on the target and the target would rise above the mound and become visible for the marksman to shoot. Now you would sit there at your bench at target gallery number 2 and you would wait for the shot to hit the target. You could actually see the shot. Now, if the marksman missed the target, then, you had to deal with that. You had to get on the telephone and say, there's a bit of confusion. But for the most part, these marksmen are pretty accurate. So you'd see the shot, and you would pull the target down, and you would look for the hole on the target. And the way the targets were marked, you had a bullseye, inner, magpie, and an outer. So you had basically 4 rings you could mark. And if the bullet just grazed the ring of the bullseye, it would be considered a bullseye. You didn't have to get it actually dead center to become a bullseye. As long as it was in the center circle, you were fine. And if it just split the line of the bullseye, it's still considered a bullseye. So what you would do is you would take this peg, which had a brightly colored piece of cardboard on it, like a fluorescent orange, and you would stick that in the hole. Then for a bullseye, I can't remember exactly, but let's say the upper left-hand corner of the target, also each corner of the target had a hole. So you take another corresponding peg and a little marker, and you put that up on, say, the upper left-hand corner, and that would indicate that it was a bullseye. So the marksman could look through their field scope, and they would say, you know what? I can tell there is a hole somewhere near the bullseye, but is it actually a bullseye, or is it actually an inner? But the position of the other marker up on the corner would clearly identify it as a bullseye or an inner. So again, it was bullseye, inner, magpie, outer. And basically, that would be the routine. So what was really interesting, though, you'd have a beautiful sunny day on a long weekend in July, and the big shoot was going on. I remember as a teenager, we would be all up there. We'd have to go into the target shed and get the targets out and set the targets up and make sure they're counterbalanced just right. This would take probably a good hour or so and get everything all set. And so the red flag goes up. So anytime you see the red flag up at a rifle range, that's the danger flag, which means that they're either firing or they're about to commence firing. So we're sitting in the target gallery, all, maybe 15 of us, a bunch of school buddies and stuff. The command is given that it's time to fire. So the red flag goes up on the pole near the target gallery in the butts. And I remember what so vividly, just waiting for the first shot to be fired. Beautiful sunny day in July. It's absolutely quiet. You can hear the birds chirping. Everybody's looking at each other, just waiting for that first shot to be fired. And once the first shot to be fired, then it's kind of like chaos. Then next thing you know, there could be 15 shooters on the mound. And then so he's got 15. It can be really active sometimes, just constant firing. And after a while, you can actually close your eyes. You get so used to the sound of a bullet traveling directly over your head that you didn't even have to look at the target. And as soon as you heard that specific frequency over your head, then you pull the target down, mark it, and send it back up again. But if you're a bit lackadaisical and weren't paying attention and you prematurely pull the target down, and it, the marksman didn't really appreciate that. Next thing, the field telephone rings up, and the officer in the butt would, you know, he would kind of give you a heck for not paying attention or accidentally pulling the target down. So sometimes, you know, if you weren't paying attention, things could go a little wacky. But if you were paying attention, everything went really smooth. And yeah, so it was really interesting to do as a teenager. I'd say it's about 1977, 1978. Well, they would still do it today. So I suspect today, during the big shoot, that the marksmen that are taking part, they might have sons or daughters that are working in the butts. Or, you know, I don't know how they round them up today. But, you know, for us, we get paid for this. So it was extra money during the summer, which was fantastic. Over the years, for example, there was historically, say, in the 1950s, there was one marksman that his daughter became a very good shot as well. And because his daughter traveled around at the shooting competitions, and she would work in the butts, marking as targets. And then she took an interest in marksmanship, and so she started competing herself. And she was actually doing quite well in shooting. And actually, that brings me to different competitions. So let's say, for example, you competed at the Nova Scotia Rifle Association. You scored really high for the annual shoot. You could qualify for the national team, which means that you would represent Nova Scotia and shoot at the Connaught Ranges in Ottawa. And in this case, this girl went on to compete at the Connaught Ranges in Ottawa with her father, yeah. Then if you do really well on the Canadian team, then you go to the Bisley matches in England. And that's the place. That's your goal. Your goal is, as a marksman, if you're serious about it, is to compete on an international level at the Bisley Ranges in England. So, yeah. You don't hear too much about it today. Back in the golden age of rifle shooting, you know, we're talking, say, from the 1920s into the 30s, and maybe the 50s and early 60s, when they competed with the 303 service rifle, it was actually quite big news. The newspapers would publish lengthy articles on the proceedings of these rifle matches. Rifle men or women, skilled ones, were looked at like sports stars today, in fact. It wasn't uncommon for a marksman to endorse McDonald's cigarettes or marksmen to endorse other products, sporting products of the time, anyways. Yeah, so it was a golden age of marksmanship. And earlier on in the 1800s, it was quite a social event. And it wasn't uncommon to see families at the rifle range, actually right even up into the 1930s and 40s and 50s and 60s, to see a lot of family members at the range. In fact, they would go up and they would take their trailers and tent trailers and camp on the range. And it was actually a big family event. But during the 1800s, shortly after the range was formed in 1865 and into the 1860s and 80s, and it wasn't uncommon for local ladies to go to the rifle range and try to meet a dashing officer at the range. And there's some wonderful engravings that depict that kind of thing. beautifully dressed women in, with parasols, hoping to meet a dashing young marksman. In fact, in Elsie Tolson's book that she wrote about the history of Bedford, these things are mentioned in her history of the Bedford Rifle Range. She has a, not a chapter, but there's a couple of pages anyways that's dedicated to the range. But yeah, it was also the leveling of classes too, which is also a very interesting social history of the range. There was few times in society, especially in the 1860s, 70s, and 80s, that a farm boy could be on the shooting mound just down, a few soldiers down. There might be, a marksman that came from the upper class of society in Halifax. Basically, people from all walks of life were on the shooting mounts, all competing against each other. It really didn't matter if you were a fisherman or a farmer, an affluent shopkeeper in Halifax. If you had shooting skills, you had shooting skills, and you were admired as a marksman. From a social history standpoint, it's a fascinating place as well. Yeah, so prior to 9/11, it's my understanding, these are just my thoughts, that the state of the rifle range was in question. And actually, that was reflected by the caretaker of the time when I started this research. And he basically said, don't be surprised if, this range is shut down at some point. And mostly for the reason that when the range was built in 1865, there was hardly anything out here. It was built along the post road to Windsor, basically. So it was built on the old Windsor Road. And you certainly didn't have the population that you did today. So fast forward 150 years, the population has exploded out here. So think about that. So you have a military rifle range right dead smack, an area that's booming in population. So you've got all of Sackville, you've got Middle Sackville, and Upper Sackville. So if you look at the map, the range is a chunk of the range in Bedford, but a huge part of the range is in Sackville. And the reason for that is that because the safety zone behind it, they need that much safety zone in order to conduct shooting up there safely. So if there's a thing up there called a stop butt. So once the bullet pierces a target, the bullet has to be stopped somehow. So that big dirt mound up there, just underneath the numbers, is called a stop butt. So that literally stops the bullets. But if there was a little rock, and that stop butt for the most part is made of sand, because bullets will actually bury themselves in the sand and not go anywhere. But if there happens to be like a little rock there or something, and the bullet happens to hit the rock, it will ricochet up. But that's why the safety zone is there. So if something does ricochet up, it'll just harmlessly fall on the forest behind it. And that's why that rifle range is so safe. And that's why there's been, very few incidents up there because of that safety zone. So who really knows at this point what the future of the range holds? But one thing is for sure, what I have noticed, and this is just anecdotal, that since 9/11, a fair amount of money has been invested into that rifle range. So at a time when you think maybe the rifle range might be starting to wind down or maybe close, who knows? But after 9/11, with all of this workup towards counterterrorism, suddenly a new fence goes up around the rifle range. They put an extension on the building. They improve the bridge and make some other improvements at the range to train boarding parties, which are frequently involved in counterterrorism operations. When they're shipped off, who knows what they're really doing? But anyways, they do training up there. So who really knows at this point what the future holds for the range? But it seems to be a fairly active place. You walk that trail, you hear the pop, 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 pop of guns and stuff up there. So it might be around for a while. We'll see.